Hello and welcome. You're listening to the You Do Woo podcast, and I'm your host, Allison Cullen. I'm a mom with a background in business and counseling, but I've always been tapped into the more woo-woo side of everyday life. I'm here to take you on an exploration of your spirituality, give you helpful life hacks, help you on this evolution through motherhood, and give you a weekly dose of useful woo. If you need your cup filled, your mind expanded, and you want to increase your manifestation abilities at the same time, you've come to the right place. Let's get started. Happy almost end of Mercury retrograde, everybody. I always joke with y'all that come Mercury retrograde time, I'm always like, ugh, is this a real thing? Like, is this for real? I don't know. And then it always kicks me in the face. My freaking email is messing up. My computer is screwing up. There have been so many weird timing issues and technology issues, more so than any other time. I don't know. Anyways, maybe it was the eclipse season. If you missed my eclipse season episode, a lot of the information in there, I know we're past the lunar and solar eclipses, but a lot of the information in there is still very applicable right now, and you'll see why. The in there and in my April energy update episode, definitely listen to both of those if you missed them. But I wanted to hold off on today's episode until we were on the other side of all of this. And so as we're nearing May, as we're coming out of Mercury retrograde, there's so much good information in today's episode, but I wanted to make sure that the communication of it, the deliverance of it, all of that was done in a clear way because it's so good. One quick timely announcement before I get started. As you guys know, I've had a mastermind for a few years now. It is magical and amazing. And with how 2024 is going time-wise, I wanted to take a break from the long-term mastermind and do some smaller versions of the mastermind. So we now have a 5-week mastermind, and the next one is starting on Monday, the 29th. We're going April 29th through June 3rd. It's going to be 5 weeks, 5 women. And as you're listening to this, I might have 2 more spots left. So if that is something that it is of interest to you, send me a DM today, probably, because these will get grabbed up with the word mastermind, and I'll send you an audio. You can tell me a little bit about you. I'll send you the details. We can make sure you're a good fit. But so far, there are some really amazing women there in that group, and I'm excited to get started on Monday. The other thing I was going to talk about, you're going to learn so much today. So my conversation is with Julie, the crunchy legal lady, and our conversation is so cool. We were going to talk about all types of stuff. We ended up talking about home births and hospital births and some vaccine stuff and all of that kind of stuff. It's really, really good. And I would tell you that the podcast that I heard her on is called Healing the Source Podcast. I will link it in the show notes. It's a really awesome podcast. And she talks about so many things on there that are very important and really informational. And I didn't want to repeat them on our episode. So go listen to that as well. And there was something that we talked about, I think, at the very, very end of this episode for just a short little snippet called the In Power Movement. So if you are somebody who wants to make sure that laws are changed on a local, city, or state basis for wherever you live, the In Power Movement is a great way to do it that works a lot better than just writing your congressman or representative. I swear, they're not reading those. So signing petitions, doing things like that doesn't really do a whole lot. The In Power Movement does. So I'm going to put a brief overview of what that looks like in a YouTube link in the show notes. And then also I'll link the actual In Power website. You can utilize this even if you're not in the US. If you're in Canada or abroad, they've had a lot of representative has stepped down. The Queen of Denmark just stepped down not long ago. It's pretty crazy. Definitely give him a follow on Instagram as well. But that is what I was talking about near the end of the episode. And yeah, Julia is really fascinating. She's a reflector in human design. She's very into human design. She is also very well versed in our legal system and everything that you can do as an individual to maintain the freedoms that we are meant to have as US citizens. So thank you for listening. Let me know if you have any questions. I appreciate you sharing this episode far and wide. And yeah, if you are wanting to be a member of our next 5-week mastermind, send me a DM on Instagram and I'll get back with you soon. You guys, I have been looking forward to this episode for a while now. I've been talking to several of y'all about Julie, aka the Crunchy Legal Lady. I'm going to put her Instagram in the show notes. And also, I heard about her from another podcast. So I'm going to put that podcast episode in the show notes as well. Feel free to check it out because there's a plethora of knowledge over there that we might not discuss today, but we are going to get into it. Welcome, Julie. Welcome to the You Do Woo podcast. So very honored to have you. And I'm excited to introduce you to my gals, my listeners. I know we have some men who listen too, but it's mostly women, and talk about all things medical freedom with you today. You are definitely on the same wavelength as all of us. And I know so many mamas are going to be really excited to hear from you. So welcome. Thank you for coming.
Well, thanks for having me, Allison. It's such a pleasure.
Yay. Okay. First of all, I must tell everybody, we have had this episode planned for a while, but I didn't know your human design until a few days ago, and I was sort of geeking out about it. So Julie here is a 4-6 reflector. My daughter's a 1-3 reflector, but for those of you who are not into human design, reflectors are like less than 1% population at the present moment. And she was born on the 4th of July, which is just so cool. Before we get into human design, I do have a reflector question for you. My 4-year-old, our only child right now, is a reflector. And that's like background story. I'm not going to get into it, but that's why I even started getting into human design, is because I was like, I need to learn everything because she's so rare and all that kind of stuff. We'll get into that in a second, but tell us a little bit about you. How did you get into this line of work in the legal world? And as the Crunchy Legal Lady, have you always been crunchy? Have you always been this into the law? Tell us about you.
Yeah, so I grew up very not crunchy. My whole family was in the medical field, and I always thought, you know, I would become some kind of doctor. Started going to school. That wasn't really for me. I mean, I really enjoyed the human body. I love learning about all the anatomy and everything like that. But really what was calling to me was more research and communication. And so that's what I ended up getting my degree in, was research. And then I went and worked for a giant research company doing consulting for high touch clients and helping them design their studies. And it was during that process that I realized there's a lot of things in research that just are not what we think, and that I just kind of had my eyes opened to, you know, the reality that we don't know as much as we thought that we knew, and that, you know, research really comes down to money in many, many ways, and the outcomes are really dictated by that. And I felt kind of unethical. And it wasn't necessarily just my company. It's just research in general is very difficult to do. It's really hard to do it right. And so, you know, money makes up for a lot of that process. And so for me, I just felt like some of the things that we were doing, or the research industry in general was doing, were not very ethical. So I decided to get out of that. And that's what really sparked me thinking and feeling like, okay, I need to figure out what is true, what is not true, and actually go through and read these studies and figure out what I think about them and actually make up my own mind about what I believe. Mm-hmm. And so that was a really big journey. And along the way, I felt very strongly called to law school. And so I decided to go to law school in the middle of before the pandemic, but started right in the middle of the pandemic. And just finishing up now, and I became a legal researcher for one of the most successful health freedom firms because it just became so important to me. Mm-hmm. So I've been able to have the privilege to work with ICANN and RFK Jr.'s legal team and do research for them and, you know, help with all that. And it's just been, I just realized, you know, during that process, people need to be able to know this mm-hmm. information. People need access to this information, specifically legal information that would really help people who are holistic, who care about health freedom, who want to live their life a different way. And if we're going to change this system, we need the knowledge to do it. And so as much as I really loved working with those legal teams, and I'm still in touch, and sometimes, you know, I get a one-off project and I work with them and things like that, I realized that, you know, my path and my gift is being able to, you know, give knowledge about these legal basics, these legal questions that people have, to allow them to then more fully go out and be their own activists or be their own advocates, and not have to fully be relying on someone else, but get their own information.
I love that so much. I'm going to share with everybody something I shared with you yesterday. One of Julie's superpowers in her human design chart is gift 48. And I'm just going to read it straight from the book, because it's pretty cool and very spot on with exactly what you're doing. It says, "You're here to be a deep resource of living wisdom for others. Your ultimate fulfillment lies in being of service to others. Your highest potential is to become a living embodiment of wisdom, which entails having to pass through some of life's deepest fears. It is through these very physical fears that you will come to understand the unconscious forces that drive human beings, and thus you will be able to help them. Ultimately, you will see that all fears are completely unfounded, and that life always has a way of working things out in the end. It is this deeper trust in a hidden life beyond our individual kin that marks you as an obvious guide for others. Your greatest wisdom is simply to give others permission to trust in their own experiences as aspects of a greater plan, and to exalt human ordinariness and the power and beauty of simplicity." So that's just freaking spot on for the line of work that you're doing. And it's so cool. Quick, I don't think I told you this. We have like sort of similar background. My whole family are doctors or nurses, like legit. All of my dad's side of the family were all doctors. My mom was a nurse. My dad was the black sheep. He ended up becoming an attorney. And he does like real estate and banking law and stuff. And I almost went to law school right out of college, which, because I sort of was just floundering and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I was like, well, I could always get a law degree and work in the music industry as an entertainment lawyer. And my dad was like, don't go to law school unless you for sure want to be a lawyer. Like, don't do it as just like another 3 years of school. He's like, you can always go to law school when he was like 28 or something. He's like, you can always go back later. There was a 90-year-old woman in my law school class. Like, it's okay. And so I ended up just getting a job in the music industry in Austin, which was beautiful and what was meant to happen. But I almost went to Pepperdine to get an entertainment law degree. So it's just really interesting. Okay, quick question about human design, and then we're going to dive into medical freedom and all that. When did you find out you were a reflector in human design, and did it resonate with you?
I found out that I was a reflector at the end of 2019. I had a friend who her husband was an energetic chiropractor, and he was very into human design. And so she was talking to me about it, and she was like, yeah, just see what you are. And I was like, I'm a reflector. And she was like, oh my gosh, that's the most rare type. I can't believe that. And anyway, so then I've spent a lot of time researching. And for me, that really actually does resonate a lot in so many ways. And of course, when you connect astrology to, you know, astrology is part of human design, but when you connect them, I can see right in my chart where the reflector pieces of me are and what makes me a reflector, both in the human design and the astrology. And I've always felt like, because the idea of a reflector, right, is this idea that you're a mirror, right? You're taking on this mirror role and you're shining. And so I have always felt that, you know, people see pieces of themselves in me all the time. And it's very difficult, even from the time I was young, for me to feel like I hate somebody or I usually was okay with everyone. And I always felt like I could understand them. That was the bigger thing. Mm-hmm. I felt like I could understand them and I felt like I could always feel what they were feeling. And the older I've gotten, the more that has come up and really tuning into that. And so I definitely felt like it resonated. And it was very interesting because for me, I've always felt like, I know this sounds so silly, but I've always felt like I am the 1%. I've always known that about myself. I am the 1%. Yeah. And it was a reflection of that. And even in numerology, I don't know if you know anything about numerology.
Not a whole lot. So, but I'm open to learning. Yeah.
Oh yes. Yeah. We can totally talk about it. But yeah. I'm actually a life path 33, which in numerology, that's the rarest type.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, to be a life path 33, which has a lot to do with bringing wisdom to the world and this idea of being a master teacher. Mm-hmm. And I just have felt, you know, when you read that to me, it makes me want to cry because I'm like, I'm trying so hard to embody this.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a big task, right? There is a lot of fear involved. So
that's crazy. So cool. Okay. So I heard you on the Healing the Source podcast, and I will link the episode in the show notes below because it has a lot of great info and I don't want you to just repeat all of it. But in it, you were talking about how you've birthed in all of the different ways, hospital, home birth with a midwife, and unassisted birth. I've only had a hospital birth, and I'm going to share just a little bit of that story. So when Caroline was born, I was the kind where I was like, okay, I'm a little bit anxious to do this at home. And my husband, he was just, I was having high blood pressure at the end and all that kind of stuff. And was geriatric being 36 years old, but that's another whole other thing. But I had her, but I had intended on having a natural birth, which is almost impossible. I mean, it's possible at a hospital, but it's more rare. I had my whole birth plan written out, but when you get there, you're sort of like just thrown into the system. And they're like, well, we do this first and this first. And the first thing they did was check my blood pressure. And that I didn't have high blood pressure during the whole pregnancy, but at the very end I did just because of anxiety. Like my head and my body talk to each other. So if I'm nervous, my blood pressure will go up. It's not like a health thing. It's like a brain thing. It's like me doing it to myself. So my blood pressure was through the roof and I was asking for nitrous oxide so that I could birth naturally. And they were like, no, we're not, like, they just were like, no, no, no. And then I kept refusing an epidural. And then finally they were like, you have to have an epidural or you could have a stroke, right? It's all this fear. Mm-hmm. And I get that, but I'm like, I know my body and my blood pressure was because of me freaking out in my head. And once it started happening, give me some freaking nitrous oxide just to like, let me get a hold of myself for a second, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was just very like not listened to. And there was some weird, you know, I've talked to lots of moms about this, like when your husband is there, your partner is there, and they don't know how to advocate for you because this is their first rodeo. And then you sort of like have this baby and you're like, I don't trust anybody, including my husband, because he didn't stand up for me and yell at them and tell them to give me nitrous oxide, like the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So ever since then, I was like, fuck the hospitals. I'm not going to a hospital again. I'm not doing this. And we're working on baby number two right now. And we just moved. So I'm trying to find like a birthing center and all that kind of stuff for potential baby number two. Tell us about, just really quickly, your three different experiences and what they were like. And did that have anything to do with you like going into this line of work?
Yeah, it definitely did. I'm very passionate about birth. I am a doula. And, you know, actually, since I was the first person in my family to do a home birth after my hospital birth. And now all of my sisters and my sister-in-law have done home births. Three of us have done free births, which has been really beautiful. And we all go to each other's free births. So I got to catch my nephew, which was like such a beautiful, sacred experience for me. But just like you, you know, very similarly, first baby, you don't know what you're doing, right? I did like hypno babies and a hypno birthing course.
Same.
And that was very helpful. Actually, I'm really glad that I did it. It was, and I do think it's helpful for everybody. It's a great intro. But of course, once you get into that system, right, once you're there and someone else's authority, it takes away your own authority, right? Mm-hmm. You're on their playground, you're on their turf. And there's all these people. I had the idea to ask a friend to be my unofficial doula. She didn't really know very much about doulaing, but she did a bunch of research and she came with us. And that actually was very helpful because at the end of my first pregnancy, similar to you, they diagnosed me with preeclampsia. And they would never have diagnosed me with preeclampsia if I had not asked for a test. Mm. It was a group of hospital midwives and a different one saw me each time. And I, you know, I knew I was swelling. I had gained 90 pounds from the beginning of my pregnancy. And I knew it was not normal. You know, this was not normal. This was not my normal body, but no one was paying attention to me. And, you know, my mom's a nurse and she had said, I think you have preeclampsia. You should ask for a test. So I was the one who demanded the test. And they were like, yeah, I think you, which now I think I would have done things completely different, mm-hmm. but, you know, and I would have been eating different. I would have been doing so many things different,
yeah.
but you know, I demanded that. Then everyone freaked out. Then it was like, we got to induce you right now. We got to get this baby out of you right now. You know, pled for an extra day, please just give me an extra day, you know, and why do I have to plead with them for an extra day? I shouldn't have to plead with them for anything. You know, it's my own body and my baby. But anyway, got an extra day, ended up getting induced. Similar to you, you know, they kept telling me like your blood pressure's off the charts. We got to give you this epidural. I got in the bath for a while, but you know, I think the only reason I didn't end up having a C-section with that birth was because of the hypnobirthing and the mind mm-hmm. work I had done. And, you know, I did end up getting the epidural because it was the same thing, right? They tell you, you have to do this right now. And it was kind of like once I actually only got one test shot. That's it. That's how much, but it took the edge off. And after watching an episode of The Office, I was like, oh, this baby's here. And they were like, that's impossible. You were just at a 3 20 minutes ago. Well, not impossible because here's his head right here, you know? So very similar. I think most women can relate to that. That is most women's first experience with birth, which is so sad. And so, yes, that inspired me both in becoming more holistic and learning about birth and actually really taking responsibility for myself, my body, my baby. And then, you know, I went into the home birth, right? Which I loved my home birth. Really, I did. I loved it so much. I had a midwife who she was much older and towards the end of her career, very experienced, so sweet, so kind. She came to my house, right? Totally new experience. Yeah. They come to you. They talk to you. They spend actually an hour with you just like talking. Such a different experience. And end up having this beautiful water birth at home with my second. I pushed with him for less than a minute. He just like, you know, it was just very magical. And I think one of the biggest differences, not just the care, but was my own mental abilities, mm-hmm. right? I definitely, and you know, after the first one, after you've had an experience, it's much easier to prep yourself. You know more what you need, you know what it's going to be like. And so that was very helpful. But I did way more mental work. Like I actually did before I learned about hypnobirthing, but then in my home birth, I actually did the work, right? Mm-hmm. And during my hypnobirthing, like, yeah, I would kind of do it, but I wasn't doing it every day or like really taking the meditations as seriously. And the second time I was like, no, I'm taking my meditation seriously. I'm doing this. I'm rehearsing this in my head over and over and over again. And it was just as magical as I had felt, as I had wanted. And it was really a beautiful experience. There were some things I would have done differently again, but it still was beautiful. And then finally we moved. So we moved so I could go to law school in between those two. Mm-hmm. And when we moved, I was like, okay, am I going to find a midwife? And it was actually my husband who was like, we should just do a free birth. we can just do this, you know?
Yeah.
which was, you know, I was like, yeah, you know, one day I'd like to do that. And I, you know, but after two, I was like, I know myself, I trust myself enough, started listening to a lot of stuff from the Free Birth Society, which I think their podcast is a great resource for people who are interested, even in just, you know, getting expanded, right? Getting expanded with what's possible for you, what can happen in a birth. And so I was like, yeah, I don't like any of these midwives here. Like, let's just do it. And when you're talking about that physical fear, part of my gift, yeah, this was like a huge experience for me. This, I don't know how much detail you want me to go into.
Oh, there's no TMI. So you can tell us all the things.
Okay. I don't want to take up too much of your time with all this, but I had a very spiritual experience. I'm similar to you. You know, I am Christian, but I am kind of an odd Christian.
Yeah.
And but I had right before my birth, about 2 weeks, you know, I ended up, my pregnancy was kind of a surprise, and I got pregnant with my daughter my first year of law school.
Wow. Yeah.
My first semester of law school, 7 weeks in, I knew I was pregnant. I was like, I know I am. I don't even need to take a test to know, but I did because I was, you know, kind of freaking out about it. Of course it's positive. And, you know, working through those emotions, but so happy, but still working through the emotions of, okay, I'm so in deep, kind of like your dad said, don't go to law school unless you know you want to be a lawyer. Mm-hmm. I give the same caution. Do not go unless you know mm-hmm. you want to do that kind of work, because it is incredibly, incredibly difficult. And, you know, I come from a very educated background. I had worked with university professors and PhDs and high CEOs for a long time. And going to law school really buried me in the first semester. It was so difficult. I just like wept and yeah. wept. And
you already had two kids. Like, I can't imagine. That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just so intense. And so my sickness, and you know, in German New Medicine, they say that like really bad pregnancy sickness has to do with a conflict of the self, like not, you know, not wanting to be yourself or not accepting yourself. And I did feel like that was my issue, because I had all these people around me who did not believe in medical freedom, mm-hmm. trying to require, you know, masks and all kinds of things, testing, and just a lot of darkness, right? There was a lot of darkness during that time, so much fear during that time. And I was trying to hold and be a light for my baby and also myself, and navigate, you know, this pregnancy and as well as law school and taking on such responsibility. It was very intense for me. And right before she was born in June. So, I had finished my finals, and I had this experience where I had an ancestor come to me, my grandmother come to me and say, hey, you're going to have a stillbirth. And And for me, I was so, you know, it really scared me. I told her, hey, she kind of said, like, it's your turn. And I did not know at the time. I had no idea that my grandmother and her grandmother, like, they had all had a stillbirth. Mm-hmm. So it like went through my family line. And I did not know that at all at this time. And I told her, you know, whatever I have to do to change this, I want to change it. I don't want this, you know, whatever this is, you can't put this on me, you know, mm-hmm. you don't put this on me. I'm not gonna. And she said, okay, well, if you, if that's what you want, I'm going to help you out. I'll do, you know, I'll do it again. I'll help you out, which was really sweet. And so, but the fear was incredibly overwhelming.
Yeah.
And my daughter was over 2 weeks late. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say late, but you know, she decided to come later than I expected.
Which sometimes you can't, like, sometimes depending on who's watching you and your doctor or midwife, they won't let you do, you know, they force you to come into the hospital. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. But because I was doing it myself, I was determined I could wait for her, you know, mm-hmm. as long as she wanted me to wait. And I just had to really work through the fear and realize, you know, it wasn't until the day of her birth. Part of me is like, this is why it took so long for her to come, you know, because I had to work through all of this. But I had to come to terms with myself and realize that it did not matter what happened. It did not matter if I had a stillbirth. It did not matter if she lived. Everything was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I was going to be okay. She was going to be okay. And the experience was going to be worth it. Wow. To be a veil and bring this child through the veil into the world. Right. Mm-hmm. It was. And, once I finally let go of that and really gave it to Christ and felt, because I would pray and pray and, you know, the answer was always, do you trust me? Mm-hmm. Do you trust me? Do you trust me? And so finally, I finally really broke down and said, yes, you know, I really do trust you, and decided to let go of everything. And, wow. You know, God just told me, okay, you're going to have this baby tomorrow. Like, you're going to start labor tonight. You're going to have this baby tomorrow. And I said, okay, I went to sleep, woke up 3 hours later, strong labor. And, she was born at 11, 12, healthy.
Wow.
And beautiful. And, she did, you know, she was breathing right away, but she didn't pink up as fast mm-hmm. as my second had pinked up. Mm-hmm. And I realized that, you know, maybe my placenta had detached a little early, mm-hmm. but she was completely fine. You know, my body told me exactly what to do, exactly how to birth her. And I knew my grandmother was there with me, right? Okay. Helping be there, catch her, tell me what to do. And she was, you know, like I said, healthy as can be. So
that is beautiful.
A 9-pound, 5-ounce baby.
Wow. So. Was she your biggest?
She was my biggest.
Oh my God. That's amazing. That's a beautiful story. I love that. I'm sort of glad that we got onto this subject a little bit more than you did in the podcast that I listened to, because I think it's really special. And we do have a lot of moms who listen to this podcast. Mm-hmm. That is one thing too, that I realized the other day. We were watching something on TV, and it was something like, something like, my daughter's favorite show is The Office. We are obsessed with The Office around here. I don't know if it was that or something else, but somebody was going into labor, and they like made it a scary thing where the lady was already screaming. And I'm like, this is not what it is like. You don't start screaming when your water breaks. It doesn't hurt. It's, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's like Hollywood just portrays from the beginning. Like, I'm realizing that when I was a kid, every TV show or movie, it was like this scary, scary, terrible thing where the lady was screaming. So I know that that's why I was so scared. It's like this fear of the unknown, like, how bad is the pain going to get? And yes, it's bad. Like, I remember people telling me, like, oh, like, my mom told me, she delivered both of us without an epidural. Mm-hmm. And she was like, it's like really bad period cramps. And I'm like, that is not true. That is not true. It is worse than bad period cramps. Maybe some people are better. But anyways, now that I know how bad the pain is, I'm like, oh, I can do that. Like, I know I did it for, I don't know, like 8 hours, 10 hours before the epidural. And I'm sure that like the ring of fire part does get more intense, but I'm like, I've been through the most intense contractions at least. So it's like, I don't really, you know, whatever. So it's like this fear of the unknown that's put into our psyche from a very early age because of TV and movies, right? And I just I think that's where that like all starts from. So I was like, okay, turn this off right now. Cam's like, what's the deal? And I'm like, Caroline cannot see this. Like, I will show her later on what a birth can look like and that it's not scary. And we'll show her that, but we don't even need to see any of it right now. And it's okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not opposed to her seeing that now, but I was like, let's just take a pause from even thinking about that till a little bit later. So I think that that's just, there's so many things that it's not just like once you get to the hospital, I'm like, wow, this started at probably age 3 for me, this fear of birthing, right? And what if I hadn't have had that, right? My blood pressure might not have gone up.
Oh, for sure. And I do think it, you know, fear is the basis, you know, the pain is stronger because you are in fear. And it doesn't mean that, you know, that I do know women who've had painless births. You know, I know them personally. I know it's possible, but not every birth is meant to be that way. Also, you know, intensity is part of the process of change and shifting and understanding the depth. And so I think, you know, if that fear implanted in us makes everything so much crazier, you know, with us, and we are starting the pain by starting the fear so early.
Yeah. So I've all for the past 10 to 12 years, I've been pretty holistic and crunchy, but I think a lot of us had like an awakening in 2020 and 2021, right? My first was having my daughter in a hospital where I was sort of like, I actually think that she signed her soul contract knowing that these first, that she'd be born in a hospital, it wouldn't be ideal, that I had to go through some of these things to like wake up. And she was like, I'm cool with that. Like, I'll sign up for the first 3 years of my mom not really being totally holistic and like be the person. I think that happens with a lot of parents. It's like the kids who they're like, okay, I'm not thinking about my own health, but I'm thinking about my kid's health. Like when we had her, we did do, I forget the lady, I read like the Dr. Sears vaccine book. And we had decided we were going to opt out of some and do staggered and do detoxing between certain ones. So from the beginning, Caroline didn't do the whole regular CDC thing. But come 2020, when all of that stuff started happening, I was like, hold on, pause. Let's question everything. This is not cool. What's going on here? Like, it was just very, like, I think that's when I sort of woke up and I was like, okay, I'm not going to be part of this anymore. We're not doing this. And I very much, like, when COVID hit, it was interesting because my like gut instinct was like, this is something's really weird about this. This is not normal. I don't need to be scared of this at all. And we're just going to go about our daily lives. Although you can't really do that. And you can't do that. So that was like a really weird situation where it was like half of our friends and family thought we were nutso and crazy and all the things. And, you know, the fact that I wasn't stressed out about it and didn't wear masks and was like, I'm not getting a vaccine if they come out with one, like all of these different things. But I'm trying, like, there's certain things that I have guilt for, like this, the certain vaccines that I did give Caroline. And I think that just spiritually, like her little body was protected from a lot of that because it was part of our path, right? Thank God. But she did have, there was one that she got where afterwards for a while, her gallbladder stopped working. Like she had white poop and that was the only change. And I was like, okay, we didn't end up going down the road of like vaccine injury and all of that. We got her gallbladder up and working again. And I did major detoxes and all that. But then I was like, we're done. We're done. We're done. We're done. We're not doing this anymore. And I don't make decisions out of fear. Like it wasn't a fear thing. It was like a just deep knowing that this is not for us. Right. And it was cool because when we moved to our small town, I got on our Crunchy Moms Facebook group because pretty much every town has one and it's pretty fun. And I was like, okay, we're looking for a pediatrician who's like, you know, vaccine friendly and all of that kind of stuff. They're like, oh my God, you got to go to this guy. We walk into this guy's office. He has the Turtles All the Way Down book on his, on his desk. And he's like, okay, tell me these things. And he's like, okay, here's research. Follow the money. Always follow the money. Always follow like the research and all of that kind of stuff. And he's not, he doesn't make you feel bad about it, but he's like, I don't do vaccines in this office. If you want a vaccine, I will tell you where to go to get one. But like, he really helps parents do their own research and figure out what is best for their family and all of that kind of stuff. So obviously best case scenario, if you're wanting to go that route, is to find a unicorn pediatrician like that. But I think they're going to be more and more now, honestly. I know they're few and far between right now, but I think that now that people are talking about this situation and it's no longer a conspiracy theory, it's I think it's going to be a little bit more mainstream. But how do we go about talking to our pediatricians or health providers or whatever about opting out of vaccines? And is it true that doctors get some kind of financial compensation from vaccines that they give?
Yes, most doctors do get financial compensation, and it's usually based on a percentage of how many of their, patients are vaccinated or fully vaccinated. Some have different kinds of, revenue kickbacks from giving certain kinds of vaccines, things like that. But most of the time, yes, they will have some kind of financial incentive, especially if they are funded by the government. Mm-hmm. So that's a really big thing. And then how to talk to your doctor about it. Well, I think, the first thing is, I actually used to have a whole course about this. How do you talk to anyone without getting punched in the face? That mm-hmm. was the name of the course.
Love it.
And particularly for someone who holds authority, right? The big trigger, and this is really sad, is going to be the ego of, I know more than you, mm-hmm. right? That is the thing. And I think some of the tips I give people is, don't go in aggressive, don't go in rudely. There's two routes you can do it, right? There's a route where you just say no, right? You say no, they may tell you then, you can't be part of my practice. That's fine. And you can find another practice. There's a route where you just ask so many questions, because doctors really only have 10 minutes with their mm-hmm. patients. And so you just ask enough questions that they're like, okay, let's wrap this up later. And then you can say, yeah, we're just going to delay today and, yep. Later. But there's another route, of course, where now resources like ICANN, if you haven't gone there, go to icanndecide.org. They have white papers that are really great to give to physicians that are fully cited, that, will really give them the science. But I think the biggest thing is, be kind, try to be jovial, try to be nice. Don't sit down, stand, especially mm-hmm. if the doctor is standing, you should stand. Maintain your authority, maintain that you are the parent, and just let them know, I have, my parental rights allow me to refuse any mm-hmm. treatment, and I'm going to refuse the treatment. They can threaten you. They can say, we're going to call CPS. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Let them do it. Let them do it. If they want to do it. And I know everyone's so scared of that. How could you say that? But most of the time, especially with vaccines, most of the time they will not call CPS, especially if you say we're delaying, and then transfer care or something like mm-hmm. that. But even if they do, people don't understand that a vaccine is a preventative measure. Mm-hmm. It's preventative. And so when it comes to CPS, they can only take your children or really take into account stuff that you do not do when your child is in actual danger. Mm-hmm. So the reason people get CPS called on them when they don't give their child chemo, let's say mm-hmm. they don't want to have chemo and doctor flips out. The reason for that is because the child's been diagnosed with cancer, right? Mm-hmm. They're in the middle of something that is viewed as life-threatening. And that's when CPS gets more involved. It doesn't mean they will take away the child, obviously. I talked about that a lot in Healing the Source. There's tons of resources for people who want. I talk about this in depth, but just know, a vaccine's a preventative measure. And even if they do call CPS, CPS cannot do anything.
Yeah.
They could show up, they could talk to you on your doorstep, but because it's preventative, it's not considered, they can't do anything like that. But hopefully that's helpful.
Totally, totally. That is perfect. And I know that both of us have a hard stop here in a couple of minutes. One of the things that I did want, we don't have to go, we might have to have you back because I'll probably have, my listeners might have more questions and we can dive deeper. But one thing that you talked about in the Healing the Source podcast that I really loved is steps that we can take to make sure that we maintain some of these freedoms. And it's different by state, obviously. But one thing I was going to put in the show notes too is there's a really great movement called InPower that do, based on what you're wanting to get to your representative or whatever, they'll do all of the letters and forms for you if you want vaccine freedom, if you want to make sure there's not a 5G tower put up in your neighborhood or like the smart meters or spraying the sky, like different things like that. They have it set up where I think you pay like $100 a year, and then all of these people send the letters and affidavits and all of that on your behalf, and they're having representatives step down from office. It's crazy. So a lot of that is going to be happening and amping up, especially in 2024, I believe. So definitely go listen to the other episode. And then I'm going to also link this YouTube about the Empower, because if somebody doesn't know, if they don't want have time to like constantly write letters or call their representatives, Empower does that kind of thing for you, which is really mm-hmm. great. Do you have any other resources? I know you have a ton of resources on your Instagram. Mm-hmm. Is that the best place for people to get a hold of you? Is your Instagram?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. For right now, we're working on a lot of stuff on our end, but yeah, just go to @crunchy.legal.lady and you can always DM me. I read all my DMs and you can just read what I have there. I have tons of resources and you know, we can always do a part two. I mean,
yes, we might, when you get into need to do stuff. That. We might need to do that in a couple of months because there are so many things. And you guys, Julie is also very well-versed in the woo too, with like numerology and astrocartography and all of that kind of stuff, which I freaking love. So I'm so excited. You guys definitely go give Julie a follow on her Instagram. It's the Crunchy Legal Lady. I'll put the exact link in the show notes so you can just go click and then follow. Send her a DM saying thank you for coming on the You Do Woo pod and connect with her and get, if you have any questions that you want me to ask, if we do a part two, please DM me, but you can also contact Julie directly as well. Thank you, Julie, for taking time out of your full schedule today to come and talk to my ladies. I appreciate you so much. And I'm so glad I met you.
Yes, of course. The feeling's mutual.
Thank you so very much for tuning in to another episode of You Do Woo. I know that you already have a very full life and that there are literally millions of podcasts that you could be listening to. So I'm super grateful to you for being a loyal listener. And I'm so grateful for you sharing your favorite episodes with friends and family members. That is how we are able to serve more people and raise the collective consciousness and really get the word out on a bunch of these fun spiritual topics that we're talking about. I would love to connect with you. Send me a DM on Instagram @youdowoo, all one word. I'd love to hear how you loved today's episode and just a little bit about you. I can't wait to connect.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.
What happens when we play outside? We become healthier, both mentally and physically. We become more creative and more focused. We connect with nature, each other, and ourselves. Let's Take This Outside, a new podcast hosted by me, Marianne Iveson, an aspiring outdoor athlete and nature lover. I speak to athletes, outdoor professionals, and scientists about their connection to nature, how it affects their performance and everyday life. Let's Take This Outside, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and at ivisonvoice.com/podcast.